Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think?
Hello and welcome to From Python Import Podcast. My name is Christopher Miller, and to my right is...
Mike Piernot, and to my right is...
Ben Smith, and to my right is...
Mike Crute, and to my right is...
Chris Miller, and to my right is...
A person who's very tired and confused.
Welcome to episode, I believe it's number 8 of From Python Import Podcast.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, so...
For the month of February.
For the month of February, coming out here in March. We have a plan. It's a 5-point plan as to how we're going to get this thing back on track and on schedule. And I'll be happy to share that with you as soon as I write it down. So, a couple of things we're going to talk about this week. You might have heard that there was a large coding convention that took place recently. I am, of course, talking about CodeMash, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Another, you know, smaller, a little more niche thing happened that I understand is something called PyCone. PyCon? Yes, PyCon. I understand what you're talking about.
The biggest, most epic PyCon ever.
Yes, we will be talking about that. And a couple of other little things here and there. So welcome, and let's get it started with the news. What's going on in the news?
Let's see. So we talked about Blogophile a little bit last time. It seems to be getting a lot of love from the community, which is great. I'm excited to see that. Ryan McGuire, the author, is actually right now in the middle of majorly rewriting and breaking all the tests for it because it's going to be growing a whole new plugin-based architecture.
Ooh, plugins.
Yay!
We can make it suck as much as WordPress does.
I don't think that's possible.
No.
Not with the power of 1,000 suns could you do that. So the idea is that this will make it a lot easier for people to distribute the useful things that they build on top of Blogophile. Mm-hmm. So... You know, I wrote a little gizmo to put my Flickr photos in the right rail of my site. I'd like to be able to distribute that without having it be part of my entire site that you then have to fork and smudge stuff around yourself, because that's a pain. And likewise, other people are writing things that they'd like to share without necessarily giving away everything in their blog or me having to pull down all their templates and things. So this is a good thing, and I'm very excited about it, but it means a lot of significant restructuring, so it'll be exciting to see how that develops. I say, you know, hop on the mailing list for the IRC room and get involved and help out if you're interested in where that's going.
I know, personally, I'm very interested in that because I keep finding neat things I'd like to do with it, but the hurdle to do so is just high enough that I never accomplish anything.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to a plug-in architecture that I can break liberally.
Awesome.
All right. Other news. Pi Week is coming up.
Yeah. So we meant to get the word out on this earlier. Pi Week is a... week-long game programming challenge where you have to build stuff in Python, that starts in April, and registration is now open, so teams are forming. By the 27th of March, the voting on the theme for the contest will occur, or begin, rather, and the challenge begins on April the 3rd. And then you have until the 10th to get your game done, and then judging starts. And then by the end of April, by like the 24th, they should have results. And you can go to pyweek.org and learn more about it, check out the rules, see previous winners. There's a lot of exciting stuff that comes out of it. Let me see, the rules. It must be challenging and fun. Entries have to be developed during the challenge. Blah, blah, blah. Awesome stuff about Python. Hooray. And your entries, I think the most important one that we found is that entries need to be written from scratch. So no personal library or code base that you've already built up. You have to use some existing thing like,
okay.
you can use the Pygame library, you can use PIL or PyOpenGL, one of those sort of enabling technologies,
okay.
But not like a library of personal like, hey, you know, over the last 3 years, I've written an engine to make a Super Mario type game, and I'm going to, like, plop some new stuff in it, and I'm done in a day.
Right.
Not approved. So
fair enough.
But it's always exciting. I've never done it myself because I don't have the mental fortitude to do that over the course of a week.
No, that way,
or the time. Yeah, but there's a lot of exciting stuff that comes out of it, and it's really good. Good times.
There were some good demos from the Lightning Talk. I especially like the Murder of Crows app.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Where basically
was that from a PyCon?
Yeah, one of the Lightning Talks at the last in the afternoon of the last day was one of the guys from the Pygame project got up and kind of showed off a couple of demos and talked up the PyWeek and showed one of the games was a Murder of Crows, where your cursor controls a murder of crows, and your job is to rip the limbs from little dudes running across your screen.
Cool.
It was awesome. Pretty cool.
Hitchcock would be
fun. I think I need to play that. That sounds great.
That's awesome. I think that's it for the news. I went to go look at what was going on with the Peps, and Pepland is kind of quiet and sad right now. So,
but the Mercurial transition's starting to pick up.
Yeah, that's exciting.
Some steam.
That's a fairly major development, right?
Yeah.
What is this?
Python is converting from Subversion over to Mercurial.
Ooh.
For its version control.
Yeah.
I think it's done now, right?
It is done. The first big import from Subversion to Mercurial got done. And they're now working on tooling and testing and workflows and just starting to play around with how do you make this work as an actual process.
So, real quick, recap, why did we want to do this? Why is this a big deal for the Python community?
Well, it does. It kind of helps to lower the barrier to entry for contributors, because today you kind of have to work very hard and strive to be a contributor and get a commit bit, and now all of a sudden you've got access to commit. But in the Mercurial world, you can start to play around some ideas and commit some patches and ultimately ask somebody to pull your changes and get a build back into the build without the upfront cost of like earning a commit bit.
That's awesome.
Not only that, but Mercurial is written in Python.
Yeah. And
delicious dog food.
Everybody knows that DVCS is the new hotness. But seriously, if you're coding on a plane, it's kind of cool to be able to actually commit.
That is very true. I have been using not Mercurial, but Git, but just to go back to DCVS, just for not only my code, but my writing. And I found that to be really, really awesome to be able to take it, not only use it, you know, to view my changes and, you know, go back, but also, you know, push it out somewhere for backup and all that kind of stuff. So I might switch over to Mercurial, but right now I'm perfectly happy with my Git repo.
So Word docs version pretty well with Mercurial?
No, actually, you know, it's funny because I use a program called Scrivener on my Mac, which is basically text and RTF files with some markup.
Ooh.
And so, you know, I'm able to archive all of that, and then I use Blogophile for my blog stuff, and, you know, I'm writing in Vim for that, so bonus. So
shiny.
It works out really well. Between that and using Thomas Gideon's Flashbake plugin, which will actually commit to your repo as not only on a time schedule, but it will also, if you use the plugins, tell you what music you were listening to at the time, what the weather was like, where you were.
Oh, that's
kind
cool.
Of thing. And you get that in the commit messages. And so you can kind of reconstruct, well, what the hell was I thinking when I wrote this passage? So anyway, cool stuff.
It doesn't yet pull a brain dump to commit, does it?
No, it does not do that. But we'll throw a link down to Tom's Flashbake project because it's pretty cool stuff. So all right, this is kind of the big convention episode. We've been storing this up. Let's talk about CodeMesh. Now, CodeMesh is local to Ohio.
Yeah, it started off regional, yeah. And actually, there's people that fly in from all over the place, so it's not just necessarily this region.
That's true.
But it was started by a couple of .NET guys, I think 4 years ago now.
I thought
they were talking about the fifth one this year.
Oh, so I guess it's about 5 years old now, and it's held every year at Kalahari. I think either Ohio or the nation's largest indoor water park. Really cool venue.
Yeah, it's held in the winter.
Yeah, it's held in the winter, and usually followed by a cheerleading convention, which struck me as strange at first, but, you know, it happens every year now. It's kind of just the way it works.
So is it just another coding convention? I mean, what sets this one apart besides Kalahari and cheerleaders?
Right, so the thing that I think is really cool about CodeMesh is that it is a language-agnostic conference.
It's actually mandatory.
Yeah, there's a large Java and .NET population there because of some of the sponsorship in particular. But there's also a lot of other stuff going on. There's a lot of Ruby. There was some Erlang and Haskell. There was
a little Clojure.
Yeah, there was a little Clojure. There was a Scala open space that was actually competing pretty significantly with sessions for attendees.
There was
there's a little bit of Python.
Agile.
Yeah, there's a lot of Agile.
Not really programming,
yeah,
but related.
Yeah, John Stahl gave a great talk about doing Agile from the top down, which means basically like having your senior management practice the same kind of agile processes and visibility, and there's a big room full of displays and boards that everybody can see. So, you know, everybody eats, lives, breathes that, and how that can liberate you and help you understand your business a little better and how to run your business a little better. And that was pretty cool. The best moment in that was he had been wearing this lean dog visor with a goofy haircut, you know, sort of blonde spiky hair, and I'd never met him before. So when he went to adjust it and, like, you know, his whole hair wiggled, and then he, like, later wiped off, you know, took it off and, like, wiped his completely bald head, the whole crowd kind of went, So that was pretty fun.
You're sure they weren't gasping at the fact that his zipper was down?
You know, most people couldn't see that, so probably for the best.
No, John, I wouldn't be surprised if he just did it on purpose.
Yeah, and one thing that I found particularly charming about CodeMash and the spirit there is that they have a official non-discrimination policy, like many conferences or events do, but their non-discrimination policy goes so far as to forbid discrimination based on operating system, language, platform, or text editor. So no holy wars at all. It's just, like, you know, about getting outside your comfort zone, seeing new things, seeing what you can learn from different technologies.
There's actually a lot of fun in, you know, being a Python person. If you go to CodeMash, don't go to any of the Python sessions.
Yeah.
Try out a little bit of Clojure, Objective-C.
You know,
or
iOS and Android were well represented as well. I should have brought, you know, Objective-C and stuff like that. I'd never actually done or seen any Objective-C. I'd never opened up Xcode. And I went to a half-day tutorial session during what they call Precompiler. And in that half-day session, we walked through a type-along exercise of building a Hello World app that spun up a couple of views and would change out backgrounds, respond to events. And to go from like absolutely nothing to being able to produce that and get some familiarity with the syntax and the libraries and where to go for help, that was really empowering. Like, I have a lot more courage that I could actually go and learn that now. And, you know, as a Python guy doing web stuff for, you know, 10 years, mm-hmm. to see and experience something completely, completely new like that and have an opportunity to spend 4 hours doing that was really powerful experience. So
you're giving up Python and going to Objective-C now?
Oh, good God, no. The number one thing that I took out of that experience is that Python has really spoiled me. If you've never seen Objective-C, then
don't.
Yeah, be thankful for the joyous bounty which Guido has provided us with. Thank you. It's just so it's ridiculous. I mean, it's not the worst thing I've seen, but oh my God, brackets around, like method calls with the square brackets around them, and the hurting.
But everything's a mandatory keyword arg, at least it's clear.
Right. so freaky.
Oh man, so what other talks really came to mind that CodeMash?
The Netflix guys showed up and gave a really interesting talk about pushing. Basically, they came to the conclusion that they'd outgrown yet another data center and now had to work on building another data center or migrate to the cloud. So they kind of talked through how they rewrote some of their apps and might transition in the cloud. And one of the most interesting pieces is the presenter showed a graph of their EC2 instances by hour and across like a time span of a month. The numbers were large. They, of course, they for marketing reasons stripped off the numbers, but apparently it was in thousands or tens of thousands of machines for encoding.
Wow.
Yeah. So if EC2 East is slow, or America East is slow, you know why. Netflix spun up another encoding job.
Wow. Jeez.
But
well, isn't, like, past a certain time of day, like, 70% of traffic in the United States is Netflix? That's mind-blowing. There was a great talk I went to about designing user experience. And anybody, and so many people I want to send to that. Like, anybody who's going to build a product or design a product should see that talk. Whether you're a developer or a business person or a UX person, it's worth worth checking out.
Do they video these and put them up like they do for PyCon?
Unfortunately not. It's one of the big problems with CodeMash, actually, because there's so much really great content, but none of it's videoed. So if you miss one of the 7 sessions that are going at any point in time, you miss it.
You're SOL, yeah.
We need to try and get Carl and his guys over to CodeMash.
Yeah. I really liked the mobile SmackDown. They had somebody from the iOS world, somebody from the Android world, and somebody from the Windows Phone 7 phone, however you say, like how many 7s and phones there are, I'm not entirely sure. But basically, each one of them had 15 minutes to write a Twitter client.
So what was the outcome of that?
The outcome of that was the guy doing the iOS development got it the most done, the most complete and working, but people were kind of like cringing about, like, if you were hanging out on the back channel, there were a lot of people cringing about, like, how much overhead it seemed like there was and how much typing there was, like how much code was required.
Mm-hmm.
But he got pretty much done. Mm-hmm. The Windows Phone 7 stuff, there was a lot of XML chewing things and scrolling left and right in a text editor.
Ooh.
To like tweak a thing over here, then scroll a mile to the right to tweak a thing over there. And I seem to remember that they had to kind of hard code fake something to get it done-ish that the iPhone guy didn't do. And then the Android just didn't get as done, even though the code was pretty clean.
Just incomplete UI,
yeah,
or did he...
Just, like, he didn't get as far into the problem.
So the moral of the story is use iOS because it's the best thing ever?
Yeah, maybe. Well, Apple will tell you that. One definite takeaway from that is...
iOS does not run very well on my Android phone.
No, it does not. Yeah, but one interesting takeaway from that is, you know, people will kind of say, yes, you know, somewhat snarkily that, you know, Apple knows better than you do, and they will tell you certain things, and you will do it this way. But they usually have a point that the stuff that they would like you to use is the stuff that's going to stay around or be getting better, and your life will be easier if you can pick up on what Apple's suggesting gently that you do. Otherwise, you'll be like doing massive rewrites and things. But I don't know. The toolkit seems to be, you know, what's provided seems to be pretty good. It's just, oh my god, the syntax. if the primary preferred platform for doing development on the iPhone or iPad could be something like Python, want something that's higher level with a clean syntax, it would be, I think, such a renaissance of additional awesomeness.
Maybe when the playbook comes out, it'll have Python support.
Yeah. Well, there was a lightning talk at PyCon that was kind of interesting, since we're talking mobile stuff for a second. There was a lightning talk where and I'm obviously getting ahead of myself talking about PyCon things, but the PyMite guys. PyMite is like a micro implementation of Python to run on microcontrollers.
Oh.
Like one of the places that's been ported to run on is like the radio control gliders. So like there's a guy with his own like Python powered unmanned aerial vehicles that he's got now. But they've also ported it to a thing called, oh, I'm gonna blank on the name now and I feel like an idiot. MiroSync? No, Miro's the wrong name, but there's a... I'll look it up. It'll be in the show notes.
Okay.
It'll be great. But basically, it's a C, Objective-C, various other platform adapter for other code. So you can now write Python code, run it through this thing, and actually have it run on iOS.
Mm.
And it's meant to be cross-platform, so that you can write your thing one way, and you can port out to iPhone or Android or what have you.
That's something
I want a little of that action.
Yeah, so I will definitely show notes. I sent emails about it to some people, and I'll just have to dig them up.
Well, I've been thinking for a while that you could pretty easily write an Objective-C wrapper around Python, like an execution environment for Python, and a couple of libraries that support like iOS's, like the camera and the text messages and stuff like that, and actually distribute that as like a like a compile your own app programming environment for iOS. So maybe
Mosync.
This is a
Mosync. That's what it's called. I found my sent email. So PyMite is PYMITE, mm-hmm. and Mosync is at MOSYNC, Mosync.com.
Now, I also hear that there was an epic pool party at...
The most epic of the epic pool parties, in fact. So at the Kalahari, you have
a... I don't want to see a bunch of developers in swimsuits. Cheerleaders, maybe.
Okay, so yeah, it's a bunch of developers, but still, there's water slides.
Okay.
So basically, there's the huge water park that closes down about 9-10 o'clock every night.
Now they're the largest indoor water park in the country.
In the country, I believe, yeah. But it closes down every night, and around I think 9 o'clock or so. But it was reopened at about at 10-11 o'clock for all the CodeMash attendees. So if you had your conference badge, you could get in. The bars were open. The slides were open.
The swim-up bar.
Okay, that's cool.
with the extension that goes to the outside. So you could sit with your cocktail, observe the snow around you, and enjoy the warm water.
Wow.
That's
nice.
Kind of cool. That is kind of
so,
cool.
The one thing that I heard, I did not attend the pool party because I was chilling out at the jam session that night. The pool party proves the CodeMash is not necessarily for the faint of heart.
Indeed not. Apparently there were like hammers hanging in the water slides or something.
I don't know, yeah. Corey Haynes banged his head pretty good on something. Got a
He gashed.
Lovely gash.
Oh, jeez.
Blood everywhere. It was pretty awesome. I was impressed that he was twit-picking about it that night.
Well, you saw this whole group of like pool staff with gloves on, crowded around a guy, and then there's blood all over the place, and they mop him up, and they're like, I don't think he got stitches though. He just got the little tape strips, but
wow,
it was
live to tell the tale.
Well, and all this coming from the giant toilet bowl.
Right.
Basically, you get in a four-person ride, and you're pushed down the slide that you circle a drain, effectively, and then at the last minute, you get flushed down the drain into a pool of water.
Oh, good Lord. Well,
it's a lot of
fun. Where can people learn more about CodeMash?
CodeMash.org, right?
Yeah, but you got to get on. You've got to watch it carefully because it sells out within 3 days.
They opened it on like a Friday. And by Sunday morning or Monday morning, it was completely sold out for like 750 slots.
Yeah.
So it goes fast. You really gotta pounce on it. And I'm glad that I did. I would also highly recommend that people do the pre-compiler day. That I thought was even more worthwhile than the conference itself in a way, because the opportunity to spend 4 hours at a time focused on learning something is a rare opportunity for us anymore. I also did that Git tutorial that Jim Weirich was running, and I went into it with a little bit of Git experience and a little bit of trepidation, and I came out of it with a lot of confidence and, that's how it works. Well, that's easy. Why was I afraid of that? That wasn't bad at all. And it was really a great thing. And his slides are available for free. The talk is, I think, like a paid talk to watch online somewhere. And there's also the exercises that we did are on a thing called Git Immersion. I forget if that's a .org or a .net or a .com. We'll throw that in the show notes, too. The other thing I thought was really awesome was I loved the music. They invited anybody with any kind of musical talent to come on down. There was a jam session on the second night, but the first night they actually had a local band that knew one of the attendees and who like Facebooked that he was headed off to Sandusky for CodeMash, and this guy said, hey, we're in the area, can we meet up? And eventually it turned out that they had the space and a little extra budget to pay these guys, and we had this amazing concert from the Womack family band,
cool.
who are sort of a roots folk with a little bit of rock influence. They did some amazing original stuff as well as some just covers that they were lighting up that were fantastic. Really blew the house down with Psycho Killer,
nice.
Which was awesome. And there was some blues stuff for the end of the night that was really great. Well, the band came back the next night for the jam session where they were playing a little of their stuff, but then they would invite people up. There was a drum kit that someone had brought and set up as an open thing. You could just go sit and play the drums, or they would incorporate you into the band. There were people bringing guitars that were incorporated, and winds and, you know, brass instruments involved, and it was just this, you know, free-floating, awesome thing. One of our coworkers, Matt Snowdog Gibberman, after a couple of beers, got him up on stage there, and he was drumming for back in the USSR, and he did great. He hadn't touched the drums in about 3 years, so we kind of lit that fire for him and kicked him up there, and it was, you know, it's an amazing moment. Well, there's a video that Corey Sitko shot of it that's on YouTube, so we'll link that in the show notes too. It's pretty excellent. But yeah, it was a great night. The band were really cool. I got to talk to them a little bit.
Cool. Yeah,
excellent experience.
Awesome.
And I think, you know, really nice, and in the spirit of it, you know, like at PyCon, there was, you know, there was a game room where people were bringing board games and RPGs and playing stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just a fun time with cool, smart people.
Always a lot of good evening activities.
Yeah.
And that, you should look for that around December time frame, I think, is when they start to open registration.
Yeah, it was
maybe
like
November.
It was like November, I thought.
Okay,
it
so was, it's.
But yeah, again, like in an eye blink, gone. So watch for it, codemash.org, and pounce as soon as you can.
Well, and if you're paying attention, you'll notice we've gone for almost 30 minutes, and we still have a whole bunch of PyCon stuff to talk about.
OMG!
So we're going to warn you, this is going to be an epic show.
Epic!
So, PyCon.
Yeah.
Amazing.
What can we say about PyCon? Beyond the fact that
it was in Atlanta.
Yes.
It was a conference. There were Python people there. Mwahaha. So the U.S. PyCon is the sort of big premier number one PyCon show for the world. And it's where everybody gets together and we talk about cool, fun things that we've been doing. And while you're there, for whether it's the 2 or 3 days of the conference, or you're there for tutorials as well, or sprints, the great thing about PyCon is while you're there, everyone is one of the cool kids. There's such a warm spirit there of a generosity. You know, a lot of people are like going with no hotel plans even, and people are just offering, oh yeah, I've got space, like you can crash with me. One of my goals this year was to be really social, which worked out real well. Like, I tried to have dinner with a different group of people every night, lunch with a different group of people every day, and that was really exciting. I met a lot of great people that way.
Cool.
Yeah, there was something else I was going to say about that, and I just lost it, because I was up till about 3 or 3:30 every night while I was there, and I'm now really tired.
Well, I have to say, after hearing you guys talk about it, I'm really sad that I wasn't able to make it. And I do want to say thank you to the people who asked after me. It was just that, honestly, I decided to stay at work. I know it's a stupid thing, but
yeah,
I decided to stay at work.
Yeah, we're going to be giving you some hard time about
that's
that
for fine.
A while.
Yeah, well, I'll be there next year.
Yeah.
I will be at PyCon next year. But
and we even bumped into a couple of fans.
Yeah.
One guy at the testing BOF, and I bumped into a couple of other people elsewhere. And, dude, that's really exciting. And I'm so glad there are people listening and enjoying and hopefully getting something out of our insane ramblings.
And now we'll have to actually keep to a regular release schedule.
Yeah, or at least a better one. Yeah, we got yelled at to release more often.
Okay,
so.
Well, we will do that. I have a 5-point plan I may have mentioned.
Yes. Are there visual aids?
There will be visual aids.
Awesome.
So, speaking of visual aids.
SlideShare or something.
Speaking of visual aids, I have heard that your talk in particular went well, Mr. Pirnat.
Oh, okay. That's what people tell me. I'm still somewhat dazed by the experience of speaking there, but yeah, the room looked pretty full. I'm told that it was quote-unquote packed.
There were people at the back of the door, so
yeah. That's a good sign. People laughed at all the right places. People paid quiet attention at the right places.
There wasn't enough sobbing, though, giving your code samples.
No, there wasn't, but it was more about being funny anyway. It was more... yeah, so I was giving a talk called Exhibition of Atrocity that was basically... you know, I've done Python for 11 years in a week now, And in that time, I've done some really terrible things. And I tried to distill down learnings that I've had along the way about how not to do things and show people those bad things and talk about them. And a lot of people came up to me later and said, dude, why were you showing my code? So...
But do you think they learned some lessons from that?
Yeah, people did. It got a lot of good response. The weirdest thing about giving a talk was, and this may be covered in the audio sample that we kick on a little bit. We did some recording while we were there as well that we'll get to in a little bit. The weirdest thing was this instant back channel. I had not spoken at PyCon really since 2007, and it was so bizarre. I turned my phone to mute mode, at least, so that it wouldn't be accidentally going off and making noise during my talk that would get picked up on the video or whatever, be embarrassing. But the entire talk, once I was about like 2 or 3 minutes in, my pocket started going crazy, vibrating from Twitter mentions and follow notifications. So imagine you're speaking in front of like 300, 400 people, and every 30 seconds or so, your pocket goes, and provides you a nice little jolt of surprise.
Keeps you awake, though,
yeah,
right?
It definitely did. So that went well. Because apparently I'm a glutton for punishment, I also spoke at the TIPBOF, which is the Testing in Python Birds of a Feather session. Did a lightning talk there. That's a environment that's a little bit like the Muppet Show, a little bit like Jay and Silent Bob, a little bit like the Roast of William Shatner. It can be pretty blue in its content. It's pretty exciting.
What did you talk about at the TIPBOF?
I talked about abusing mock.
Oh,
I
that
actually,
had to go over well.
I showed how I used mock in production code rather than trying to refactor and re-architect something that was old and horrible that worked, and I didn't have time to do the cleanup that was necessary. I put a wrapper around it and made some awesome "I have control of you because I have mock, wahaha" type of things. I can control your horizontal and vertical deep down later on, and you won't know what's really global and what's not. And later on, Titus Brown pulled me aside at a party and said to me, "I want you to know that was the worst shit I've ever seen in my entire life." And I mean that sincerely. I'm hurt and offended. It's the kind of shit my graduate students would write.
Whoa.
I said, "Then my work here is done." And he turned and walked back to the other side of the room. So
I think he gave you what's more, sir.
Yeah, I can't tell exactly. There was maybe some alcohol going on at the party. I'm not quite sure how to read that. I've either angered and offended and made an enemy, or gained a mark of respect, or maybe somewhat of both. I wasn't saying it was a good thing. I was doing it because it was fun and it was bad to give. Anyway, and then I also did a lightning talk on Sunday afternoon to announce the liveness of a personal project. So another goal to check off for this year, that finally launched a personal project.
Bravo.
It's called howoldismykid.com, and it will tell you how many weeks or months or days old your kid is, so that you can know. Because when you're a new parent and everything's about how many weeks old is your kid, but you're too sleep deprived to have any clue whatsoever.
Well, then it transitions into how many months old is your kid? How hard is it to talk in fractions of a year?
Yeah, these aren't it's not a granularity that we humans are used to expressing. We think about like, well, I have a 1-year-old, I have a 5-year-old, I'm 34.
I think I have to correct you and say that this is a man thing, because women can calculate this stuff.
Okay.
At least wives can.
Good.
Good
for them.
I know.
Well, anyway, so dads out there, this is how you can be the best dad ever. Basically, you punch in your kid's name and birth date, and it tells you, and then you can subscribe to an RSS feed in your favorite reader, and every day you get a new entry that tells you how old your kid is that day. So it can be in your face all the time. This started as a cron job that ran for my daughter every day so that I would know how old she was. And a couple people said, "Well, that's a great idea. Why don't you make a web service out of it?" And I said, "That is a great idea. Why don't you make a web service out of it?" And they said, "I don't have time." And 3 years passed because I didn't have time either. But it's up, it's live. It's basically just like a rinky-dink pylons app wrapped around the guts of that cron job. But
I am going to go on my Android phone.
Yeah.
And I'm going to use the RSS widget.
Yeah, there you go.
So that I can see how old my children are.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just in case your wife gives you a pop quiz.
Oh, she will.
The fun part there was, I hadn't even sat down yet when people were letting me know about the bugs that they found. So
that's awesome.
Zero to first bug report in about 30 seconds, maybe. It was pretty exciting. So
thank
luckily, yeah, luckily I got that fixed on the plane ride home and pushed once I got in. Then I had chocolate chip cookies and beer. So
excellent.
That's pretty good.
Well, what do you say we break to some of our what are we going to listen to?
So we met up with Rick from LocoCast, who brought awesome recording gear. I think Mike knows Rick better than I do. You want to say anything about LocoCast?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know
anything about LocoCast. So.
I'm not terribly familiar with LocoCast.
But
we met Rick at CodeMash.
Yeah, we met him at CodeMash.
Actually at Pi Ohio before that.
I haven't been to Pi Ohio because I'm a bad person.
Oh.
I'm incapable of love.
Yeah. I didn't know Rick had a podcast until he said, "Hey, we should join forces for PyCon."
Yeah, his talk at CodeMash was really awesome too. He was talking about using Celery to talk to RabbitMQ.
Yeah,
it was a great high energy talk which was very welcome at the end of a couple of days of drinking from the brain fire hose. funny, fun, good to be at. I'm actually looking forward to playing with Celery and trying it out because of his talk.
Also recommend listening to LocoCast. I know I just added it to my podcast.
Yeah,
he does
some. So I think he's got a separate cast for his rants, Rick's rants, and the LocoCast stuff. He is lining up a bunch of cool interviews with people. I think he's actually got some.
I think he had Barry Warsaw
things.
Maybe
yeah.
And.
So, yeah, so we sat down together on Sunday morning for a joint recording session. He brought the gear, and we brought some people. And
joined by a couple of other people from the Python community.
Yeah.
Thanks to everybody who showed up.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. So, yeah, we can run that.
Excellent. Well, then let's dig into that. We'll be back there toward the end. There's also some man-on-the-street type interviews mixed in here.
Yeah.
And all sorts of goodness. So kick back and enjoy, and we'll be back as soon as it's all done.
Bye.
Tell us who you are and what do you love about PyCon?
My name is Ryan Hunter. I'm one of the engineers at Dropbox. It's really amazing to meet like all these faces and like put faces to the names and emails that I've seen over the past couple of years. It's exciting to be here.
I'm Jeff Armstrong. I mostly use Python for fun and some work for scientific computing. I love Python because of it's free. I like its syntax, and it's fast enough.
My name is Steve Hastings, and this is my first PyCon. And this is sort of like having a fire hose of cool Python stuff turned on me, which is refreshing.
My name is Brett Cannon. I love Python because being a core developer is about the only opportunity yearly I actually get to come together and actually people I work with on a semi-regular basis on actually making Python what it is. It's actually interacting with the community and actually see what people are thinking and wanting. Honestly, it's just a very nice, warm, fuzzy feeling to actually get to see so many people come out and actually enjoy something you work on.
So I'm Todd Blattman, and I work for ActiveState, based in Vancouver. And I love working with Python because I actually use it to build an IDE for Python developers.
Oh, I'm one of the founders of Dropbox.
Okay,
Iraq. It's really exciting. All like outside people about Dropbox and just like share how we use Python, what Python is like for us, and thinking about coming back.
Python exists because I created Python. This is the one time a year that everybody just wants to shake my hand and have a photo opportunity. And it's sort of crazy, and I don't aspire to that, but it makes me feel good, and that is worth it.
I'm Jesse Noller. I'm the PyCon 2011 co-chair, and I'll be chairing the next 2 years of PyCon. And I love PyCon because we've got almost 1,400 people here, and this place is amazing.
We love Noodles!
Woo!
All right, so I'm Rick Harding here with LocoCast.net, and I'm with the guys from Python Import Podcast. Boy, that's kind of hard to say, from Python Import Podcast.
Wait, no, that's syntactically incorrect. There's only...
Oh, crap. Exception. So anyways, we're here to talk about what's going on at PyCon, and with me I've got...
Mike Crute from Python Import Podcast.
That
sounds weird
from.
With only one from.
Anthony Skopatz from the Insight Podcast. Terry Peppers, I don't have a podcast.
Terry, you're quiet, man. You gotta talk louder and get closer to the mic.
Okay.
I'm Mike Piernot. I'm the Cleveland-y dude. Yeah. I'm really tired. And Terry, you have a podcast now.
Yes,
that's right. Yeah.
Awesome. David Sanek from Python Import Podcast.
Awesome, guys. So, oh my goodness, I think we're all exhausted. Holy crap, has this was my first PyCon, and I'm like all excited and geeked, and like by day two, I'm like, I need a nap. It's so tired. What have you guys seen that's just been the most, what's the most awesome thing you guys have seen so far?
Tip off.
I'm depressed. I was scheduled to go to Tip Off, but I've got a coworker that I never see because he's remote in town, and so we're like, we have to like have crash courses for the stuff I've been trying to talk to him about over Skype.
Do Tip Off and then do that later.
Yeah, bring him to the Tip Off.
I don't understand that. Right? Yeah, you could have met at the Tip Off, right? Oh. You could have actually eaten at the Tip Off.
Oh, man. Yeah, so now I'm depressed that I missed it. It sounds like it was quite awesome.
This is Terry Peppers. I'm the organizer of the Tip Off. So this is the third year of Tip Off. And I think last year there were, you know, a lot of the Cleveland guys were there. And I think going into it this year, there was some concern that it wouldn't be nearly as epic as it was last year, because last year was epic. But I think this year we topped it in many different ways.
Yeah, if the Twitter feed is any indication, there was definitely epicness going on.
Yeah. There were a lot of goats.
although luckily this year, Gary Bernhardt was not forced to enact the part of the goat.
That's correct.
So
right.
That's probably a win for him.
A loss for our Flickr stream.
Right.
Yeah, a loss for the Flickr stream.
Oh, no.
Mike is making reference to the 2010 tip-off where Mike had no slides and actually needed a goat, so asked Gary Bernhardt to...
I asked for a volunteer, and he did volunteer.
Oh, that's right.
So, yeah.
He did an admirable job.
He brought it on himself.
Right. He held very still.
Yeah.
right. So the topics covered last night were kind of all over the place, right? Like
another mock library.
There were DSLs.
Yeah, there were DSLs.
Oh, and there were some DSLs.
And then there were some more DSLs, right? And then there was this mock library, and how about this mock library? And then let's do a comparison of all the mock libraries.
So was there any convincing reason to not just use mock?
I think it depends.
Because Flutter is a cooler name.
I think it depends on who you ask, right? Like, I think Gary Bernhardt would say use Dingus.
Right.
I think Michael Ford would say use Mach.
But were there actual, like, reasons involved, or was it more just like, I am awesome, therefore use my tool?
I think the funniest thing about the mocking libraries was that Kumar McMillan, who's the author of Fudge, is kind of the outlier in all of those situations, which is 90% of the room either uses Mach or Dinkus, right? And then there's this small percentage, mainly Kumar, and some of the guys that I work with that use Fudge.
Oh, so he's like the Apple of mock libraries, you know, 10% and we rule.
It's really more like the BIOS, I would say. really not no. even Apple, it's more like BIOS.
Okay.
That's harsh.
What else went on besides the mock libraries?
I showed a place in some production code that I'd sanitized / filled with expletives for public consumption.
if you sanitized it, it would suck a lot less.
Yeah, this is true. Well, it did. I carved out whole huge chunks and replaced them with "do this crappy thing" kind of stuff. But showed using mock to actually take control of some output of something that was tied into some horrible globals and like basically saved me from a huge deadline. And it was so egregiously, horrifically awful that at a party last night, Titus Brown came over to me and was very clear about exactly how horrified he'd been, and that I could never pay him enough to work in our code base, and that was the, quote, kind of shit that my grad students would write.
Oh.
And that he was personally offended. I told him, great, my work here is done. So.
Leaving an impression with the important folks, that's good.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
always good.
Well,
we've also caused Gary physical pain by seeing our code base.
Is that hard? I mean, does anyone ever have code that would not cause Gary physical pain? I think we've all got a suite of tests that would cause him to keel over.
That's a good segue, though. The other thing that happened last night, where there was a small contingent of... science haters, academics, So there are a few of us who got up and described how bad testing is in the academic environment. Who was the guy who said, like, it took him 13 years to get his PhD?
Oh, Brett.
Core committer.
I think it's very, very scary when I think about when I went through college, I hated programming, and then I went into sysadmin and got back into programming because it was fun when I actually did it in the real world. And it is scary how different your programming classes are in college and going through school than what you actually are supposed to do, like, in your career, like at a job. When you get into things like testing and integration, continuous integration and just all everything that you're supposed to do, you don't do any of that stuff in college, it seems like. It's actually rather frightening.
Well, it's hard to appreciate any of that stuff until you've really been hurt by the fact that you didn't do any of it. Like, the first piece of code you try to refactor and then break because you had no tests, and actually you didn't really understand what it was doing anyhow, makes you appreciate the fact that you want to write tests in the future.
But I think that's what's interesting. Maybe that the experiential element of academia, or the lack of an experiential kind of curriculum in academia, is what prevents academics from really kind of understanding why you need things like that, right? Like, I think we were all gung-ho for a lot of years, at least in the 90s, where you weren't doing any testing, you weren't doing any code reviews, you weren't doing continuous integration.
I'm still trying to push testing through work, so I'm in the 90s, what are you talking about?
But, you learn to do those things more when you really get burned by it. And that's the important thing.
There you go.
Well, but is it possible that in academia, like, you're setting up a whole big suite of stuff to solve a problem, and then once you've solved your problem, you're just throwing it away and moving on?
That's possible, but, if you're going to try to do any, like, science behind that, there's a famous case, right, where this one guy, he published several papers based on his code base, discovered something new.
So at that point, it becomes a proof of your experiment, right?
Well, you would think, but there was a minus sign error in his code, and he had to retract 4 papers from places like Nature and Science.
Oh,
and things. So because he didn't have tests, like, just...
See, that would qualify as a burn. I think that would last.
Yeah.
But actually, that's a good point. If you're publishing your code to back these papers, you probably do want to have tests because it's a lot of work to go through and, like, the peer review process and...
Yeah. Well, not that they would ever look at your code, but they should.
Well, you think they'd at least run it, right?
No. You're just giving them the results that you generated. It's very unscientific.
Okay. That opens up a whole new world of, like, oh, I didn't realize that.
Did you have so much faith in academia now?
Not anymore.
Man, it's the sausage factory. You just don't want to know how it really works.
Right,
you
exactly.
You don't want to look inside or you're going to walk away depressed.
Just give me the hot dog.
So, tip-off, what else, anything else out of tip-off, or should we move on to interesting talks or side conversations, or?
I can't remember much.
Yeah. So, for future time-traveling people that may uncover this millions of years from now, somebody was really, really brilliant and scheduled PyCon to overlap with the Daylight Savings Change, so we are all exquisitely tired.
Yeah, we probably should have had this recording yesterday. Pre-daylight savings change.
Glenn Fittich from a MongoDB mug is awesome.
Is it web scale?
I learned that at the tip off.
Is your MongoDB mug web scale?
What's the 64-bit install or the 32-bit? Because you only get half a cup if it's the
32-bit. It's not the 32-bit install. I'm disappointed.
Does it support?
Well, I couldn't reliably hold enough scotch in it, though, because you need 2 mugs for that.
Right.
You can scale to 4 instances at least.
Does your ceramic mug support sharding?
It was slightly sharded by the end of the night.
Mm.
But, my liver actually doesn't scale proportionally to MongoDB. So.
There's got to be some way we can outsource that or something.
Crowdsource that.
Right, that was a great... So that was one more tip-off talk, right? That was Armin from the Verkzeug and Flask frameworks. He did an excellent kind of tongue-in-cheek talk about doing website monitoring by just monitoring Twitter, right? So he runs a site called Poku, and basically he says, well, how we monitor is we just kind of search Twitter and see if Poku's down ever. it was pretty hilarious. I thought that one was really good.
We actually do a similar thing for monitoring if Facebook is having problems or not. So they, a lot of times we'll come in on like a Wednesday morning, and
everything Facebook related will be broken that we're dealing with, and because they have a release schedule where they push stuff on Tuesday, and it usually catches us after, because of the time zone difference, it usually catches us after we've all gone home. So Wednesday morning, business owners are upset, and oh my God, what did you guys do to the site? Facebook. So you know, one of the first things we ask is it a Wednesday? Yeah, okay, probably. Things are broken. And then if it's just intermittently weird, you can go ask the Google real-time news thing and just search like Facebook down, and if a lot of people are complaining about it, then yes it is.
We could probably use Tweepy to write a Nagios check for Facebook.
Yeah, I think we should.
No, we should be patching into that. What is that website, the Is It Down or Just Me?
Yeah.
Right.
It should have like a live Twitter stream going through of like sites that matches like a regex of like a site and is down or something going by, so you hit the landing page and see if your site's in the feed on the front page, man. That'd be awesome.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
That'd be really cool. Yeah. So but the one thing that's funny about the Paku is Paku down thing last night was immediately the entire room starts tweeting, is Paku down?
Shit!
Is it down?
Oh, so that explains a lot. As someone who was not there, I see a bunch of people talking about is it down or not, and I was like, really, at this point, really, are we caring? Yeah. Oh, wow.
Just to piss Armin off.
That explains a lot.
It's that kind of thing. So it's sort of a mix of like the Muppet Show and Jay and Silent Bob, and with Steve Holden involved, a little bit of like sort of the William Shatner roast.
Yes.
And yet somehow strangely educational.
Yes, it's a brilliant and amazing time. I'm glad that PyCon has
it. Now I'm even more depressed that I didn't make that. Let's talk about stuff that other people might have made.
Depressing.
Best talk, anyone?
I would have to go with the man I'm sitting next to.
Oh, Pernod's no, please.
Talk, Exhibition and Atrocity. I was telling him yesterday that the room was totally packed, and it was an excellent talk that got great reception, and it taught a lot of lessons with real production code. And it's those kind of talks that I think are the best. So I'm going to give it up to Mike.
Aww.
How many face palms were there for each example?
you don't need reviews. You just need a face palm. That's how you know your talk was good, if you reach a certain threshold.
Yeah, so the weirdest thing about giving a talk at PyCon was how much the world has changed in the last 3 years in terms of the back channel and the immediacy of it. I at least had the presence of mind to put my phone on mute, but I'd failed to turn off push notifications to my Twitter client. So while I'm up giving my talk, my pocket starts going
like
crazy with all these incoming mentions and follow notifications. It was a bizarre experience.
Wow. So you didn't just like put it up on the podium to kind of watch as it goes by?
I didn't have the presence of mind. I was too focused on just like, oh my God, I've got to give this talk and I've got to get through this. So
I'm curious because there has been a big real-time push. There's the Service Convoy that a lot of people have been using as a back channel versus IRC and things. Which, if you don't know, it's Convoy.com. It's a web-based service. It's like a cross between web forums and IRC and, I don't know, everything, really.
Yeah, it's like Twitter and IRC and one with
cool
like chat rooms.
Very topical.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
there was like a thread for every talk that you would go in and jump into, and people were discussing the talk, and what was awesome was that, you know, links would come by, and people would be throwing links into the Convoy channels or whatnot. And I'm curious, as a speaker, I'm tempted to have like, you know, I want to get like a tablet just to kind of prod up next to me while I'm speaking and see if you could actually like give your talk while following going by. I wonder if you could do like the real-time adjustments.
You could put it below your slides and then have
that was dangerous.
I mean, obviously having it up front would be probably a bad idea just because you have there's always the one guy in the group who's more than happy to, see the talk.
A couple years ago, Ian Bicking had the PyCon IRC room right underneath his slides, like up on the board where everybody could see it, and it was fun, and then it got really out of control.
Yeah.
I think what's been really nice about Convoy is it feels like it's a little less anonymous, you know, knowing that it gets archived and logged. People are, I think, for the most part, being a little more respectful.
You tend to know, you know, I mean, you're using the same login throughout the whole time. You run into people in different threads and different talks throughout the whole conference. You kind of, you know, I know that guy and I know who that guy is now and stuff.
Yeah.
And your picture's next to it too, so.
Well, I mean, your avatar.
Your choice of picture, right.
I've seen some dancing hearts and stuff. I'm not sure it's everyone's picture, but yeah.
That guy actually is a dancing heart.
Oh, is he? Totally missed it. So that's been kind of interesting to kind of follow that stuff as things go by. It's cool because you can kind of ask questions that are on topic. I know in the Couch TV talk, I actually went in having a couple of questions that I could be, you know, while the talk was going on, hey, does anyone tried this or, you know, a little bit beyond that, you can actually get a little bit more out of the talk from the audience than just what the, you know, because they're presented, they're 30-minute talks. I've got to say, my first time at PyCon, I have been kind of disappointed just in the fact that I think the talks are so short that you don't have time to really give out, like, a lot of the super nuggets, and that, you know, they tend to be
more of a teaser,
overviews.
Right?
Yeah.
Because Zed's talk on Zero MQ was far, far too short, because, but it really gets you into, like, hey, this is really awesome, you should try.
Jeez. Yeah. You okay over there, man?
Oh, it's better now.
So
dead, Jeff.
I'm actually part of the Python program committee, right. And one of the very common pieces of feedback that we get every year is that people want longer talks and more extreme talks. So what the organizing committee constantly struggles with every year, right, is trying to strike a very good balance between how do we get a very good diversity associated with the talks that we're accepting, just kind of topical diversity, right? But then on top of that, you know, you have PyCon. This is the largest PyCon ever. And what's strange is that, you know, Van normally has people raise their hands. How many is this their first PyCon, right? Or how many people have been using Python for less than a year? And you actually have a very large beginner contingent. So
yeah.
You have to strike that balance, right, between, right, like, deep dives, right, which is what the whole extreme track was for this year. Right?
What's the feedback been on that?
Yeah, and
I went to a bunch of extreme talks, and it sounds like Zed Childs was a good extreme talk.
Yeah.
I went to the Profiling Memory one, the Dude, Where's My Memory? I thought that was a good extreme
talk. Yeah, I wanted
talk.
To go to that. It was in my time slot, so I couldn't.
You know, that was one of the better, but I've also, a couple of the other extreme talks, I know I kind of walked out of going, it wasn't really all that extreme.
Well, so that's a good point, right? Like, the program committee takes a risk whenever they say you can come present,
right?
And you don't want to give someone an hour and a half if they suck.
Oh, right, it was new.
So,
I mean, the extreme talk. This was the first time trying that. I'm just curious how the feedback's been on that.
You know,
I can tell you, for a couple of talks, it's been awesome.
I
love the idea.
Yeah, the general concept behind the extreme track is instead of someone wasting 5 to 7 minutes, which in a 30-minute talk is a lot. On just kind of, okay, well, this is a socket. This is this is what I mean when I'm doing asynchronous I/O. Just by allowing them to get away from that stuff and say, okay, we're going to jump in, right, and we're going to start talking Zero MQ right now.
Right.
I think that's a good thing. But you know, I don't necessarily know how extreme they were.
Yeah.
So they kind of seem to be all over the board, right? Some of them were really extreme. We're gonna dig into VM internals, and some were a little bit higher level than that. But the extreme talks, though, seem pretty well balanced to the ones that I've seen.
I think it's a great idea. I definitely hope they continue that going forward. I know it is nice to get that mix of, you know, jump in over your head and you know, see some of the cool parts. Because, you know, in a 30-minute talk, I know, like, the coroutines talk was kind of that way where, you know, I went in looking for coroutines, but it was a great talk because he was like, all right, first let's do this with just, you know, CGI script. Now let's do it Mod Whiskey. Now let's do it with Twisted. Now let's do it with, you know, G-Event and doing coroutines. So it was great that the talk was very well balanced, and as someone who's, like, making a decision, you want to see all that. However, on the one hand, like, I really don't know coroutines. I wanted to jump in and, like, all right, boom, here's this coroutine. It's badass. It's awesome. You should be doing it. You know, go, 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 you know. And so I think that's a good space for that is those extreme talks like that. So it'll be cool seeing how that goes going forward. anybody else? Awesome talk that you saw?
The Superboard talk was pretty fun, actually.
Oh,
like,
I can't wait to the video of that. I was there, and it was so epic, I can't wait to see it again. It was
wow.
It was great.
Really?
Yeah. So I saw Beasley talk last year on the Gill.
Which
was awesome. And then he gave the keynote at SciPyCon, which was on concurrency back in June or something. And I didn't think he would be able to top the Gill talk with that, but he did. And then I didn't think he'd be able to top the concurrency talk, and this one just, like, blew it out of the water.
So
yeah,
what was
it? Was
for everyone that doesn't know, like, what is Superboard?
Okay, so a Superboard is this really old, like,
1978, I think.
1978, 1977, like, doorstop of a computer, and
it looks like an organ, basically.
Yeah.
And you know, it has like audio jacks in and out.
Yeah,
and
that's
how you control it.
Oh.
Yeah, because its storage mechanism was a cassette recorder, right?
Tape. Right.
Tape.
And awesome. So,
okay, so I saw a lot of the tweets and stuff, but I thought the audio thing was just like, that was the fun part of it.
Yeah, so
audio, but that's
no, no. The fun part was building a cloud service for this thing.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, but I honestly, the first big win was the audio. Like, how do you get this talking to your machine? You know, how do you build the network interface for it? And you know, showing what does a one and a zero look like? And you know, he pre-made these audio samples and was having Python spraying out zeros and ones to this thing to be able to talk to it, and be able to then parse it on the other, you know, coming back in from it because it spits those noises back out so it can talk to the other stuff.
So what was the cloud side?
Well, he did a lot of stuff.
Yeah, once you've got it where it can talk out to the rest of the world, then you can start plugging it into all kinds of things.
Right, so he built a mechanism where it could share memory with his Apple laptop or his MacBook or whatever.
Right.
And then he built an emulator for it on the Mac, and that's what he eventually sent out to the cloud, actually. So you could control from any emulator back to the shared memories thing and, you know, pipe that right directly into this old machine or whatever. It was awesome.
Yeah, it was neat. And I think one of the requirements was he had to be able to use the keyboard from the old Super Board, type stuff on the screen there, and have it actually go out to the cloud and do stuff.
Right.
So tweet from a Super Board?
Everything from a Super Board.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and he's been tweeting on behalf of the Super Board throughout the conference, and it's been hilarious. go back and follow it while Twitter still has it in there.
Didn't the Super Board go to South by Southwest?
It went to South by Southwest, apparently.
Wow. We should mention, while recording this, the 2011 videos are starting to make their way up to pycon.blip.tv. They're not all up there yet, but they're starting to get up there, so it sounds like that is definitely one, if you missed it, to go hit up and check out. By the time you hear this, by the time we get this recording and stuff out, I'm sure that most of them will be up. That is like epic fast.
Hillary Mason's keynote's up there already and all that.
That's
Carl and his team rocks.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Carl and his team have made such massive improvements since 2008 when they first started recording. If anyone remembers 2007 in Dallas, it was all audio recordings, so there was no video. And then 2008 was the first time that they actually did video recordings, and it took a while, right, to get those videos up online. But in 2009, they got up quicker. In 2010, they got up really quick, right? And now we're seeing that, you know, you're getting all the real good ones up, like, immediately.
It's insane. I mean, we're a few guys sitting here doing a recording on a podcast. It's going to take 3 days to get out and up in an MP3 format with no video. The fact that they've got, like, you know, five tracks of talks, and then within, you know, 2 days, they're starting to get up, and it's amazing. So, mad props to those guys. And I know, as someone who has come into my first PyCon, I have lived on those videos for the previous years, watching some of the awesome talks and stuff. So, that's a service that you just can't get enough credit for the Python community as a whole. It's sweet.
Yeah, even if you do manage to make it to PyCon, the choice of which talks you're going to go to is damnably difficult.
I've got a video list a mile long already.
Yeah, in every single time slot, there were at least two things I wanted to see, if not four or five. And it's just brutal trying to make those choices.
Well, that's what's nice, though, is you can feel good going, all right, even if I go to this talk, I'm still going to watch that one by the end of the week, which is
right.
Yeah.
I think
that absolutely makes your choices a lot easier. What I end up doing a lot of these days now is I'll go to the first half of one talk that I want to go to, and then the last half of the next talk, and basically go back and watch both videos.
How's that work out for you? Because I've kind of thought about jumping, but I feel like I couldn't, you know, get into another talk.
It's not for everyone, but jumping allows me to see all the different people, right? Maybe catch a hallway track or two. So
gotcha.
The problem with just watching is you don't get the experience.
Right.
Like when you went to Mike's talk, it was hysterical.
Right.
I mean, you felt energy in the room, right? So when you're watching on video, you might laugh, but it's just not the same as actually being there.
Well, yeah, that I was going to make that point. The thing that you miss by not actually being in the... Like, and the only thing you miss is being able to jump on Convor and, like...
Right.
you know, Convoy.
But I have used that to follow talks I couldn't be in when there was multiple at the same time.
Yeah.
I'd be in one talk and I'd have Convoy of another talk going to kind of get a little bit of a feel of what was going on and stuff, you know?
Right.
So that's been really interesting. Although, I have to say, I forget who it was that made the point. It might have even been Titus or something that was like, if you want to truly enjoy PyCon, close your laptop and pay attention. And I caught myself changing over to that halfway through the conference, where I'd be on Convoy and I'd be typing my notes and all that, and I went to pencil and paper and leaving the laptop often in the bag, and I did find that I was getting more out of those talks by doing that. Although I did feel that itch to not communicate, but
to be plugged in,
to socialize, yeah,
right.
Because it was cool to see the other people's feedback and stuff in the live streams of things, the Twitter feeds and that. So I ended up doing a little bit of a balance of trying to get the Convoy app on the phone. While doing my hand notes and stuff, but still trying to keep the laptop closed and put away was definitely, it's a different experience. You should definitely try that out going both ways for sure. All right, so that was talks. How about, I was floored at how awesome the BOF sessions and the sidetrack stuff going on in the open space rooms and things, they were competing full bore with talks that I wanted to go to.
Which BOFs did you end up going to?
I ended up going to an OpenStack BOF. I went to a lot of them at night, and so I didn't end up going to some that I wanted to go to because of other things going on. I know I wanted to go to the continuous deployment one, but it was like right at 6 o'clock, it was tough to make all the stuff. A lot of the talks ended up having BOFs afterwards where you would have loved to. Maybe you didn't get all the detail of the talk, but you wanted to go to the BOF afterwards, but. I mean, the board out there has been packed from 5 p.m. straight to 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Every single night, and all the rooms. I mean, there's like, what, 6 or 7 different BOF rooms out here, and the board was just packed. We were trying to schedule this recording, and it was like, how about we do this time slot? And everyone was like, no, there's something going on at that slot. Like, all right, well, the only other slot is this on Sunday. No, we can't do that. Like, all right, we're going to be like at the last slot of the last day of the last thing trying to just squeeze this thing in because there's just too much.
Complete immersion.
Yeah, if there's anything that I don't like about PyCon, it's that it has made me regret not evolving into a being of pure energy beyond the need for biological imperatives like food and sleep.
Yeah, I didn't get dinner till real late yesterday. It was like, well, we want to do this, and eventually you're like, I must consume food like at some point.
I think that's one of the real big draws of it, though, right? Is that there's so many different tracks that you can do, right? So there's so much coverage in just the traditional talks. There's so much going on in the hallways, just talking to people, maintainers of packages you use, people you've met from other, PyCons. And then the BOFs are great if, you want to get, just kind of meet like-minded people about and talk about topics that you're really interested in. I mean, that's what I think is awesome.
Yeah, if you haven't been, we want to push that. How open everyone is at this. My roommate, I was laughing at him because every day his goal was to eat a meal with different people. And so what he would do is he'd go to Twitter and go, hashtag PyCon. I'm looking for different people to have lunch with. Who's available? And people would reply back, hey, come join us. And like dinner last night, he's like, I'm looking for people to have dinner with. Who's available? And, he'd get replies back and he'd meet up with his group and end up going out downtown having dinner with people that he had no idea who they were. I thought that was just an impressive example of the community. Just like hang out with people you don't normally hang out with and see and learn and really cool, interesting, different things,
Yeah, and on that note, right, there was a Convoy thread about rooms. Like people who just needed rooms or had rooms available would offer them. I did that last year, actually. I just came, had no plan, like nowhere to stay, and like had a couple friends who I knew I could crash on their floor if I needed to, but eventually I just met someone new and like he had an extra bed in his room, and so
that's awesome.
That's definitely a good way to go. I tried that 2 years ago, and now every conference I always just end up getting a double room and like, hey, somebody can room with you.
Yeah,
but it is kind of a cool way to go, and it's also cheaper, so
yeah,
it's a win all around.
Has anyone used their room besides? I kind of thought I was going to get all this like hacking and stuff done, and I'm really motivated. I want to build something now after the conference, but I have no time to sit and write code right now. I'm like, come on, sprints. I'm itching to write some freaking code. But because the program's so packed, you're just like, I have to go to that, you know? So
your room's just for passing out.
I mean, seriously, you don't really
use it more than that.
No, my room is a charging station for my laptop overnight while I sleep. That's really its only goal.
It's for everything to recharge, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And take a shower. That's basically it.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Everyone, yes, we must take shower, definitely. Yeah.
One thing that I miss from the PyCons that were in Dallas was the lobby setup, where in Dallas there were, like, you know, little nooks of chairs and couches arranged in you know, semicircular formations or circular formations, and you literally have geeks with laptops on every horizontal surface of the lobby all hanging out because the Wi-Fi was terrible and you had to pay a zillion dollars for stuff up in your rooms. And so people were just out all night long hacking on code and talking and jamming on stuff, you know, cranking out cool projects till all hours of the night. And the lobby here in Atlanta is kind of this barren wasteland. There's like a weird sculpture thing that reminds me of the warp core from Star Trek, because it's like three stories tall and goes through a hole in the ground.
Or Wicker Man.
Or Wicker Man. Yeah, it's like a weird combination of like warp core, Wicker Man. But like, there's only a few chairs, and they all face sort of outward into this vast empty space, and that's kind of sad.
Well, you could go down to the ballrooms. Yeah. Although it seemed this year that nobody was really down there.
Yeah, well, there's also not a lot of comfy chairs either. Like, I'm looking for the comfy chair social experience, not the, right, like, sit-in conference chairs or hotel conference chairs for another 2 hours and destroy my back kind of feeling.
Yeah, yeah, so that's a good call. You do end up regretting the whole conference chair thing. But it is the, I mean, the Wi-Fi is great. There's,
yeah, the wire,
there's to plug in.
Yeah, network is super solid. It's really awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I've had it bombing me a couple of times, but for the most part, it's been awesome. And the hotel Wi-Fi has been awful, so I've actually come down to the ballrooms at night to work on stuff just because I could get good Wi-Fi doing that. So
I'm going to troll the podcast and say the only people who've had Wi-Fi problems are the ones not using Macs.
Yeah.
And as the Linux user in the room here, I will fight back and go, had anyone noticed how a lot of the Macs have had presentation problems on the display projectors? Oh, you noticed that as well. Okay, I just wanted to see if I was imagining anything.
That's more crashed. Like, up in front of everybody, literally just crashed like a Windows machine.
I forget who it was yesterday morning who was like, normally I love my Mac because it just works. And while it's like going to crashing to hell on them, you know, it's like, ooh. But yeah, so.
Hey, but we can get on the Wi-Fi, so.
Right. Yeah, once we reboot, we can get on the Wi-Fi.
So, okay, Linux and Mac need to work together as a team to get full functional operating systems. Anything else that we should bring up? I don't know, are you guys coming in for a, was there something after this? No? Okay, I was making sure we weren't getting kicked out because we're approaching the
We can switch people if we want, I mean.
Yeah, anybody
yeah,
anything
come on
interesting?
Up. Yeah.
Share with the people what was awesome about PyCon.
Shuffle.
Oh, wait, we're getting waved off. People are like, no. Look, there's no camera. We won't put anybody's faces on.
No. Yeah. I actually just wanted to mention one talk that I had seen.
Definitely.
By the way, my name's Matt Giberman. I have the dubious honor of working with both Mike's and Dave Stanek. So, anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. Thank you. I went to the genetic programming talk by Eric Fleur.
I don't know.
He's right here.
Okay. Can you pick him out of a lineup?
No, I couldn't. I was actually sitting very far back.
It was
a very good talk,
Aaron,
by the way.
You've been brought up.
There you go. You've been called out.
All right. Thank you.
So my question is this the talk that you gave at Pi Ohio last year?
Plus.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, yeah, I went to it. I wasn't able to catch it at Pi Ohio. As a matter of fact, like, almost everybody I went down there with went to the genetic programming talk, and I wanted to go to Jeff Armstrong's talk, and actually he's giving his talk today, and I have to miss it because my flight leaves early, but...
Well, what talk is that?
Well, at Pi Ohio, it was using Python to do numerical simulations.
Oh, okay.
And, but I think I spoke with him last night, he says he's toning down the Python part of it because his work, they told him, you know, why are you talking about code? You should be talking about your work. But anyway, the genetic program, it was really... fantastically interesting to me. And,
so what was it like? Because I totally missed it in another talk, but it sounded interesting.
So what's the rundown?
Yeah,
on,
yeah.
Give your talk. Let's see.
You do a 30-second capsule.
So the rundown is, and actually before I start, you know, you mentioned about the laptops. Actually, unfortunately, my presentation, there was a projector problem. So having laptops and being able to download the presentation actually worked great. In that case, you know, because otherwise I don't think they would have been able to see a lot of the code. But so in a nutshell, basically it's evolving algorithms or programs to reach some sort of solution to a problem. You know, Hillary Mason in her keynote mentioned the Evo Lisa, so I had to hack Evo Guido, which is it's not in a very good state yet, but I'm planning to hack on it today. So hopefully, hopefully we'll get it to actually evolve Guido here.
It's kind of a cool idea that you have a program that you know has a certain output, and then it sounds like you basically check it against what is a known good output and go. Mm-hmm. Did this program reach closer or further away yes. from the correct output? And then it does small tweaks to try to reach that goal.
Yeah, and those tweaks are the same tweaks that, you know, nature uses to evolve, you know, species. You know, you have mating basically with crossover, and you have mutation, you know, which happens during, you know, cell replication or cosmic rays. And you have, you take both of those and you evolve a population just like what happens in nature.
Very cool.
So are you actually then generating new programs, or is it just tweaking parameters on an existing program every evolution?
Well, you know, there's an initial random population, and you can insert, you know, new members that are completely, you know, randomized from scratch. Other than that, you know, you create new individuals when you mate, right? You know, you combine two individuals, and parts of one individual become, you know, the new individual, parts of the other individual become that. So,
but what is that mating? I mean, how does that manifest itself in like Python? What are you doing there? Are you actually creating? Are you creating new code from that, or?
Yeah. So a genetic program is kind of, think of a Lisp tree. You know, it's a program tree. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be, but a lot of times it is. And so, the nodes on the tree are operators, like plus or minus or absolute value or whatever, and then the inputs are subtrees, and you basically just evaluate, and you know, you have terminals that are numbers or variables or whatever, and you just evaluate and come up with some value.
So it's basically like a parse tree then.
It is, yeah. I mean, think of a Lisp program, right? It, you know, it's just it's very similar to that. And PyEvolve, which is the library that I use, actually takes that tree and turns it into Python code. You write your operators in Python, and it sucks you know, variables from the scope of the fitness function, mm-hmm. and it plugs it into the program. Runs Python to evaluate your program. So
that sounds like a fascinating way to solve a problem.
Yeah, it is. It actually is.
Well, it's interesting. It's strange because you're comparing against a known correct answer, right? And most stuff you tend to be trying to find the correct answer to generate it. So it's kind of interesting that you know the answer, you're trying to work on how to get it, and then what do? Then reuse it for other problems of similar nature.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
once you're like, oh, I know that this path is the correct path to for this use case. Now I'll try another case, and hopefully the same set of work is the same again.
Yep. I mean, as long as you know what a good solution is, you may not be able to derive a good solution yourself, but as long as you can determine what a good solution is, in the case of Evo Lisa or Evo Guido, it's you're trying to take a set of polygons and have it look like a picture that you've given it. So you know you have that picture, that's your reference, right? And you're trying to evolve this painting made of just, you know, 30, 40, 50 polygons to evolve into a picture that looks like a good representation of the Mona Lisa or, you know, Guido van Rossum.
Very interesting stuff. So that is a video to make sure you check out on the PyCon video stream for sure.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
I just want to do a shout out for the Japan Relief Fund that's associated with PyCon this year.
Yeah.
So if you text Red Cross to the number 90999, you'll donate $10 to the Red Cross for Japan Relief. And then if you go ahead and tweet with the hashtag PyCon Cares, we're trying to beat out the same number of same monetary donation that South by Southwest is having. So
we have a big contest, South by Southwest and PyCon. Happening at the same time has been a little bit of a... It's funny watching the Twitter feeds go by of the people that are... I wish I would have went to the other one, or I wish that I could be at both, or it's been kind of an interesting tie-in.
Yeah. And there's also, what, like Penny Arcade going on this weekend, too, but...
Oh, yeah. There's PAX East.
Yeah, going on too. But I'm really glad that, you know, the PyCon community is one that can quickly organize to do nice things and try to make a difference. That's pretty...
Now, will you be able to do that when this actually, when we release this podcast a couple days from now?
I'm sure you can, right?
Yeah.
The Red Cross is...
I don't think Red Cross is
going to
shut the door. We don't want your money anymore.
Right.
But I know that there's some goals meet. I know that there was a BOF, they would have a goal of $2,500 to come out of the conference by today. So obviously, if you're listening to this, you're not going to be part of that total. But I'm hoping that we reach the goal for sure.
We're about halfway there, it seems like, right now.
Is it?
Yeah. So.
I gotta be a better way to get the total rather than watching the people that double post to Twitter the hashtag. I'm sure there's gotta be more that people that just don't take the extra step, but oh well. So with that, I guess I will bring up that I'm doing some interviews during the sprints. If you have a cool project that you would like to push or promote, find me. I'll be set up. I'll be talking with some guys from Pyramid, from SourceForge, Michael Ford from Canonical. And hopefully we'll get some other interesting interviews and stuff up. So come by and find me. I've got cards on the table over here, and we'll have some great material coming out of PyCon 2011. My first time, and man, it kicks ass.
Yeah, it does. Woo. We have time for the world. Are we wrapping up?
Oh, no. We got time for anything.
Okay,
man.
Cool. I've got an interview coming down. John DeRosa. So this is actually one of my favorite things about PyCon this year happened before PyCon. Is this guy from Seattle decided that he was going to take the bus cross country.
I saw his tweets.
And he tweeted the whole way, and it was brilliant and amazing and hilarious. And so I've been playing touch and go with him all week. You know, we kept tweeting from the same tutorial sessions and talks that we were in. Finally, I met up with him for lunch the other day, and so hopefully he's on his way down, so we can catch him in a little bit.
Very, very cool. All right, see you guys later.
Right, so we were just talking about trying to get John down here to talk with us. He's from Seattle and chose to take a bus across the great land of ours to come to PyCon. And
yes.
I thought this was one of the greatest things about PyCon was following all these tweets of his adventures along the way. So hoping we can chat a little bit and
So the first question is, why did I do it?
Yes, why did you do it?
So
awesome self-interview, I love it.
Okay, there's a couple of different levels of answers. One is, I really do not like what flying has become in the U.S.
You're here.
It's not the flying itself, it's all the stuff before and after, I guess mostly before. The last air travel trip I took, the straw that broke the camel's back, it was one too many barks by a TSA minimum wage employee. It was one too many weirdnesses going through the line. And so when the scheduling for PyCon came up, I looked at my schedule. I just wanted to see if there was another way to do it. And so I evaluated bus, train, and plane. And bus was 2.5 days from Seattle to Atlanta. So 2.5 each way for a 5-day conference was about the limit of what I would tolerate. A little bit cheaper than airfare, actually, $100 cheaper round trip at the time that I was doing the booking, although I wasn't doing this for the money. Train was most expensive and longest because the tracks don't go anywhere near in the right direction. I think Amtrak had to go over to Washington, D.C. and then make a hard right turn. And so I decided I wanted to actually try to do this. And, you know, it's kind of a thing where, you know, you get online at the airport and you grumble and you say this isn't right. But I just wanted to try to actually sort of do something locally, and that's what I did. At another level, I hadn't taken the bus in, cross country in like something like 30 years. And I just wanted to see if it had changed. And, a couple of days going slow. I thought that would be okay. I turned on AT&T tethering, which was useful after Chicago, but from Seattle to Chicago, not good coverage.
Yeah, I saw your post going through Montana, and that's a,
nothing.
That's a big state to go through.
Nothing. There are no electromagnetic waves in Montana. I think it's a big sink. I maybe had edge. If I had a signal at all, it was GPRS. But after Chicago, it was okay. The buses from Seattle to Atlanta, the buses got better the closer I got to Atlanta. In fact, from Chicago onward, I had the new Greyhound buses with Wi-Fi and 110-volt power.
Holy crap.
Yeah, it was very nice. Actually, it was nice. And leather seats, although, you know, this wasn't Corinthian leather. This was...
you cared about the seats. You had Wi-Fi and power?
Wi-Fi and power. And actually, from Chicago onward, pretty decent coverage. Going through the Appalachians, it was kind of got a little spotty. But also, the closer I got to Atlanta, kind of the more weird people got.
Call that the South.
It was
as someone from Seattle, you may not be aware, there's a line that when you cross,
really?
Life gets interesting.
I
spent a lot of years in Virginia and Oklahoma and stuff, so I represent, but I moved out. So
there's a lot of unusual people out there.
Just a few.
Yeah. It was maybe the weirdest single event was the Amish who got on the bus. So right there, you know, there was a little bit of cognitive dissonance going on. I'm like, shouldn't they be on horse or walking? And then there was the drunk guy sitting behind the Amish who called them Mormons and who told them to sit down. And right after telling them to sit down, he blurted out, Amish make the tastiest turkeys, which I don't understand. I don't even know if it's true or not. Do Amish make tasty turkeys? I don't know that Amish even make turkeys.
I have to say, my experience with turkeys of the Amish and non-Amish variety is that the Amish do make very, very, they raise good turkeys that taste great.
So they don't make the turkeys, they raise them.
Like, I don't know if I'm even comfortable with the thought of making turkeys.
I was going to say, I think you met an individual who has an interesting take on how food comes about.
Yeah. It was unusual.
You got like a mileage total for us? We want some geek out
some
on some
stats.
Numbers.
I'm sorry. A total of six buses. Transfer.
Right.
Mileage total, unfortunately, no, but I will keep track of that on my trip back.
I'm just curious.
The layovers were, you know, either anywhere from 20 minutes to like 2.5 hours. The bus personnel are kind of interesting. They give you different rules depending on who you talk to. So I would talk to one person, they'd say, the luggage you're checking under the bus in storage is checked through to Atlanta. Don't worry about it. You go from bus to bus, but we will move your bag for you. And I'm like, rock on, that's good. And then I would talk to other bus personnel, and these are employees of Greyhound who said to me, do not trust us with your luggage. You should move your luggage from bus to bus. Which I could see another passenger saying that, but
right.
The employee says that would be like a pilot saying, you know, you don't want to get on this plane. I mean, you know, I would not take this plane. So that was a little odd.
So
this is my first podcast ever.
Yeah, cool.
Congrats.
I am no longer a podcast virgin.
So tell me. So you did last time you did a cross country bus trip was like 30 years ago.
Yeah, college.
Yeah. So what was the same? What was different?
Wow.
How has that ride changed in that time?
You know, it turns that's a good question.
Do you remember the first one? Let's start there.
I do. The first one was sort of like a college semester break thing. So bus is more comfortable. They probably pollute less, I guess. Laptops have not been invented yet. I think people are about the same as they were 30 years ago. I seem to recall I also saw some
I'm not sure if that's a good sign or a bad
sign. People are the same, I think. I think the bus technology has gotten a little bit better, but...
Awesome. Eric's got his hand raised. This is awesome.
What was the resolution of the lady who was fighting with her abusive boyfriend?
Oh, yeah.
Story time.
Thank you. Yeah. That I sort of blanked out on because it wasn't an amusing thing. It was actually very, very sad. So there's this... it was in Seattle. Woman gets on, sits in front of me, and as the driver's talking, her phone rings, and her ringer tone is something about, oh, it must be a booty call, which kind of humorous, kind of weird. You know, but, so during the trip, it turns out she was visiting her mother, and her husband was very abusive, physically abusive, and she would talk on the phone to her abusive husband or partner during the trip, tell him to not call, and he would call back, and she would always take his call. And what came out, because she was talking in a kind of a loud voice, and I think at some points everyone on the bus was sort of like listening in, I mean, this guy apparently beat her and choked her, and very, very abusive, and he was with another woman, and she would say, you know, why don't you stay with her? Stop calling me. But and then she would hang up, and then he would call back again, and she would take the phone. And I came close to saying, you know, you don't know me, but you know what? Don't take his call. Change your phone number. There's a thing called a SIM card. It can be changed. You can get a different number. Don't even go back there. But, and she just, yeah, he was apparently very jealous about her going to visit her mother for 2 days, and we all heard the drama on the bus. Something that you probably wouldn't, well, you definitely wouldn't have happened on a plane, but it was actually rather sad. She got off in Milwaukee. So yeah, thanks for asking about that. That was actually kind of very, very sobering. Just why did she keep taking his call? And she apparently was going back to him after the end of the trip.
Gosh.
So what do you say to that? I mean, it was very, very sad.
Oh.
Another oddity is we went through Fargo. North Dakota.
I love this part, yeah.
Yeah, Fargo was interesting. So the movie Fargo, you know, painted Fargo up, or at least implied it was kind of a small little podunk kind of town. But actually, Fargo is actually a metropolis in the area. I think it's like the largest in the state, actually, in terms of population. And it has the first largest or second largest. It's actually kind of sprawling, and it's actually, you know, a really good-sized city. And as we were going through Fargo, I was looking outside, and I realized the road at the beginning of the movie where the cop is killed, we were on that road. And I was like, wow, I know this place. And, you know, it is just like it's portrayed in the movie. There was no CGI there. It's, you know, long stretch.
Of just
empty. Flat on both sides. And, you know, even the scrub was exactly the same. And that was really great. That was just kind of exciting.
So cool. We should tell everyone, though. So basically, along this whole trip, you tweeted it. Yeah. What handle were you using to tweet that?
John DeRosa. That's my name. It's kind of boring, but and nothing fancy. It's just my name. Yeah.
Is there any plans to archive that before Twitter takes care of disappearing for you, or saving it for posterity's sake, or anything? Or?
I hadn't thought about it.
It's kind of like a journal. I kind of feel like it was a little bit of a travel journal that someone might keep.
Yeah,
and have around, but not
my,
that kind
my
of.
Tweets and posterity are words that don't normally collide in the same sentence. I don't normally think that way.
Okay.
It's coming out in 2004.
Yeah, right. Movie. Although I guess Twitter already archives, right? And I guess there's somewhere there'll be a business that buys an archive of feeds, and I'll get stuff.
Library of Congress will have it.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. You're probably right. So I'm leaving tomorrow, and people have asked, you know, are you going to fly back? And I'm going to bus back tomorrow. And the bus leaves, I think, at noon, and away I go.
So I guess the answer is a question, would you do it again?
Yes, I would. Although, in all honesty, I'm going to think about, so 2.5 days, I admit the last day, half day, I was getting a little antsy. Seats are, you know, pretty comfortable, but still fundamentally you're sitting. And yes, you get up and stretch during breaks and layovers, but, you know. So I'm wondering if maybe my real upper bound should be like a day and a half or 2 days. I think the last half
day. It should
be
easier, right? Next year, PyCon's out in California.
Yes, that's trivial. Actually, I may take the train. I mean, Amtrak, just stay in the same time zone. Oh. Absolutely. Amtrak is great. But in this case, it was just not, you know, it was just 4 days each way would have been too much.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Cool.
How are the meals?
So yeah, food. Wow, you know, we would get off at a stop. Okay, break, food break. You know, you got 20 minutes, and you pile off the bus. You go to the stop where the bus pulled in, and there's a lot of crap out. Can I say the word crap on a podcast?
Yeah, we've got the explicit tag on both of ours. So
yeah. I can curse. Can I say like
you can say it was shit food. That's
shit.
Fine.
I can say shit.
Yeah.
Food in across America. It's you know, it's like you want to know what's wrong with America, you just check out what people are eating. And now, by the way, I am no fitness expert. I mean, I'm sorry, I should talk into the...
That's right. I've got it up a little bit. Oh. You turn around.
See, I'm new at this. Sorry. So, you know, people would get out of the bus and they would, you know, on a, you know, pork rinds, beef jerky, chips, crap. And it's like you look for a piece of fruit nowhere to be seen. The healthiest thing I found on most of the stops were like Planters peanuts. I figure, you know, peanuts, salted peanuts, but yeah, not good. And there
so,
are.
So you couldn't eat at real restaurants. So you just ate at like.
Yes.
Snack places. At convenience stores.
Right. So in the whole 2.5 days, there was only one layover that was long enough to consider, and I did eat at an actual restaurant, which was a Rock Bottom, which was a chain, but hey, it was, you know, decent food. So only one layover. Most of the layovers were anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes, and a couple of them were in McDonald's, the kind of the 20, 30-minute layovers. People would run in and get, you know, burgers and stuff and come back. They were not coming back with salads. You know, they were coming back with, well, McDonald's food. And there are also a lot of...
McDonald's makes salads into McDonald's food, too. That's the other
that's
problem.
Well, it's all...
Or like that oatmeal thing.
Yeah.
That,
oh. Yeah. There are a lot of rest stops in Montana and Dakotas and Idaho that sell art, moose art. If you're looking for pictures of moose to hang on the wall, and they have, you know, valued at, and then there's their price, which of course is less, which is like, I mean, you can buy this for like half off what it's really valued at. So like $1,000 and then half off, and then they have a special going on right then. So I when I go back, I'm going to pick up a bunch because I think it'll look great
in
our house.
It's an investment.
Actually, it is. Well, you have to make sure you store them temperature and humidity controlled. But yeah, basically, yeah. A lot of moose out there.
Yeah, I don't know that in Seattle. I don't know about that. That seems like it'd be a lot of work to try to keep that quality over time.
Well, I mean, we've got a wine cellar. We toss the wine and we put that in. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Great. I just went to PyCon and all I got was this moose art. That would be awesome.
Well, my wife wants me to bring her back something nice, and I like to always, I'm thinking of you,
sweetie. You must
sweetie.
Ask, by the way,
so,
this is true.
Well, I don't want to get into that. So I figure moose art, I think, would be awesome. I think she'd really appreciate it.
Cool. What's your favorite thing about PyCon so far?
This is my third PyCon. So I really like... a whole bunch of smart people coming together focused on an area with a lot of different interests within that area for a period of time. And it is, PyCon is invigorating. I come away from PyCon, yeah, I could list, you know, yes, there are I'm going back with like four technologies I want to look at for work, and I'm, you know, yeah, I made some new friends, but it's the whole thing. It's the energy level, it's the interest, it's seeing what other people do. And it's being in a room where, you know, probably half the, you know, I mean, half the people here are way smarter than me. And it's like, I listen to some of these people, Hillary, like, oh my God. I mean,
she'd had a great opening keynote. I thought that was really awesome.
That was virtually perfect as keynotes go. And I checked out her blog and it's like, she's got neurons to burn.
Yeah, we haven't had that good of a keynote opening since, I think, Rommel's talk on literate programming in Dallas.
I was not at the Dallas one. I started coming in
06 or
07.
I forget which year that was, but that was a great keynote too.
Yeah, I mean, she is. And have you looked at her blog?
It's like, I need to. Yeah.
You know, I'm reading her blog. It's like I need a dictionary to read her blog and possibly
awesome.
A thesaurus. It's just, she's incredibly smart, and that was just a great keynote. And it made you think. One interesting thing about this year's PyCon. So I, like a lot of people, I'm on Twitter, and I kind of mourn the passing of IRC as the back channel. But Twitter seems to want. I really like IRC. It's better designed for this. Just the whole structure. But Twitter. What can I say? Twitter won. But here at PyCon, so there's two tweeps that I made friends with on Twitter. Never met them before PyCon. We hooked up here at PyCon, and you know, so now we've met face to face. And in fact, one of them is here because I sort of proselytized PyCon to him over Twitter. Like, you should go check it out. And he's like, okay. No. And so, and now we meet, and that was really great. That was quite pleasant.
Awesome.
The social side is definitely
yes.
a great thing for these conferences.
It is. And everyone, I mean, what's not to like, right?
Yeah.
I mean, smart people, and they're friendly, and you can pick their pockets, and you know, come away profit. I mean, it's good.
I'm moving my chair further away now.
Okay. Yeah. I just say the energy level is really infectious, and it's about the only thing that's keeping me going right now. It's just like existing on the good vibe of this place.
I know I gave a Rick's rant a while ago about the I called them the part-time developer. They do go work a full-time job, but they don't experience, they don't take their careers enjoyed enough to do it outside of work. And I know whenever I go to all these conferences I can, the PyOhio's, the Ohio Linux Fest, the PyCon now, and I never feel more motivated to go back and write code than after a conference. A free, you know, like the PyOhio is a free 2-day thing over a weekend. And yet for the first month back after that, man, I am so motivated to write code and do awesome things. And so I've got to say, if you guys don't come to these things, you are definitely missing out, and I will run around and call you a part-time developer. I will.
Okay. All right.
And the other thing, if you know everybody who's here is having a great time at PyCon and is excited about this, Python is underrepresented at CodeMash, so you should apply to have talks at CodeMash, and we can represent a little bit, because
I gave my first talk last year. I definitely trying to get more Python content. Although I do have to say, I really enjoy the idea of CodeMash, of going to talks of things that are outside your circle.
Right. Well, that's why I think there needs to be more Python content there, so that the .NET guys and the Java guys and all those folks can have a taste of the good stuff.
And if you don't know, CodeMash is a conference in Sandusky, Ohio at a giant water park. And it's awesome because you can bring the family. I know my wife and my one-year-old went this year, and they went and played in the water park and at the playground area while I went to a conference, and then we got together at night. So if your wife does not like you going away on your own for a weekend at a time for a conference, it's a perfect one to go to because it's like safe for family. It's awesome.
Yeah. I have to check out soon because checkout time is soon. So I gotta go pack.
Sounds like we're wrapping this one up.
Okay. Yeah. Unless anybody's got stuff they want to jump in with.
So thanks so much for sitting down with us.
Okay. And yeah. Thank you, John. It was great.
Have a safe trip back.
Thank you. Thank you.
And, and hopefully you bring some snacks with you. It sounds like that's a.
Yeah. Bring some granola bars or something. Yeah. Do any of you want a piece of moose art that I could pick up?
I've got my own.
Oh, you got your own? Yeah.
Okay. We go to the UP up in Michigan and you can get some good stuff.
It's an interesting thing, though, to use that as the art target and then also kill it afterwards. I think it's a sort of a recycling thing.
So awesome. So that's John DeRosa, and you can find his, what's the site here? SeekNuance.com?
SeekNuance.com is my blog, yeah.
So check it out, guys.
Okay.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I gotta say, it sounds like you guys had a fabulous time. And again, I'm regretting the fact that I did not go.
Yeah, in what, the 6 or 7 years that I've been going to PyCon, to 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, I guess seven PyCons I've been to, I'd say it's by far the best. Really blew them all away, exceeded expectations. Really looking forward to Santa Clara.
Yeah, with Jesse leading the charge again, or this for the first time.
Yeah, the organizers did a great job. Thanks to Jesse and Van and Doug Napoleon, who did a great job, getting everything moving and everything flowing smoothly. It was
For the PSF for kind of helping fund and keep those guys going.
Yay, PSF. Yeah, also big thanks to the PSF for kicking in a little extra money to help us get to the Japan relief donation level that we were trying to get to.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed that we couldn't get $2,500 from attendees, but we got a little over halfway there, so that's great. And it's great that the Python community is one that cares and will try to help out and make the world a better place however we can.
Yeah.
Even in little ways. It all adds up and helps. So.
Very nice. Well, we have to mention many of the talks from PyCon, not the tutorials, but the talks, are up at pycon.blip.tv, and you can see talks from years past as well.
Yeah, 2009, 2010, and all the 2000. Yeah, honestly, by the time the podcast gets to you, probably all the video will be uploaded and made available. And the video, I've watched a few of them already. They look great.
Yeah.
The AV team did an amazing job with encoding.
and getting them turned around in time. They've also got, it's really great, not only is there video of the speaker, there's a video out feed from whatever's on somebody's laptop. So they've got all the slides, so you can see everything, read the code samples, study the things that you didn't get a chance to really pick apart while you were there. You know, the thing about PyCon was, you know, with five tracks that were super awesome, mm-hmm. and all those open spaces, there's no way that you could get to everything. You really needed, you know, this conference more than anything else makes me want a re-entrant timeline.
Right.
You know, I want to go back and back and back to absorb the whole thing. But there were over, what, like 95 slots plus several rounds of lightning talks throughout.
So two a day.
Yeah. So if you watched a 30-minute session a day or a 45-minute session a day, just, you know, that little bit, you know, to help keep PyCon in your heart, you know, you'd be, you know, just around 3 months, a little over 3 months of content. So highly recommended. A lot of great speakers, a lot of great talks.
Fantastic.
I watched a man realign a radio telescope array in South Africa live from the stage in Atlanta using an IPython shell, and it was mind-blowingly awesome. And then he said, well, I can do this to all my telescopes and busted out a list comprehension. Just fantastic.
And building a web service for a superboard.
Yeah, that was epic. That video, yeah, the superboard video is not to be missed. Definitely check that out. Yeah. So pycon.blip.tv, check it out.
Well,
so great.
And on that note, I think we're going to wrap it up for this time. We'll be back in 2 to 2.5 weeks with another episode.
Wow, that's...
I have a 5-point plan.
That's optimistic. Okay.
I have a 5-point plan.
I would like to see this plan.
I will be happy to show it to you.
This is a good plan. I'm excited to be part of it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. All right. Take care, everyone. We'll catch you next time.
Later.
Bye.
This podcast has been released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives Works 3.0 Unported License. The theme song for this podcast is Code Monkey by Jonathan Colton. Learn more about him at jonathancolton.com. To learn more about us or to catch up on past shows, please visit us at FromPythonImportPodcast.com. Monkey like you.